Closer, the Entrepreneur's Circle.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at On Air Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automagically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands.com so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I'm your most happy and humbled host, Eric Cabral. As usual, I have an amazing individual here who's going to share a ton of insight and bring a ton of value to you. No pressure, Zach. Spoiler alert. I have today with me Zach Nadler of CEO. He's the CEO of Vayner Speakers. He was a former CAA agent, which is the creative arts agency based in New York, probably the biggest speaker bureau agency. And he had a little guy by the name of Gary Vaynerchuk. Nobody knew who he was. And he was helping getting him on stages. They grew a friendship. They grew a brand. And together they grew and started to decided to create Vayner Speakers. And since then, they've been working to grow other brands like Jesse Itzler, Tom Bilyeu, Ryan Holiday, and one of my personal favorites and love, I love her to death, is Claude Silver. But all that being said, brother, I'm so happy to finally be here with you on this show. Welcome to the show, Zach Nadler.
Thanks so much, Eric. Appreciate you having me. It's great to see you.
Yeah, brother. I have been wanting to chat with you for a while, and I finally worked up the courage to be like, dude, get on my show. But because it's been a while. But yeah, let's get into it. Let's tell a little bit about your story, starting with the eureka moment that caused a major pivot in life or business.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you had asked me to be thinking about this a little bit. And with my background, like, you know, I was a go-getter in college and, you know, worked full-time throughout college at different jobs. And I always kind of pursued stuff. So I was always usually the younger guy in the room. Even to when I started at CAA, I think I was 24 as an agent starting there. So I had a lot of pressure on me, but the real eureka moment came like 2, maybe 3 years into my work there, where my boss kind of pulled me aside and was like, hey, you're prioritizing all the wrong things. Like, just go out and sell, just do it. Right. I was really focusing on a certain area that I was kind of brought in to focus on in sports. And once I kind of had the brains pulled off me and let free, that was really where my career exploded, right? I was obviously there for a reason. I knew what I was doing, but I was really focusing more on a specific aspect. And then once I realized kind of how you can create a relationship with people, how you can build value for someone over a longer term, my business just exploded. Coincides, you know, probably coincidentally, maybe not, with the explosion of Gary. I think, you know, I was reading his stuff and kind of believed in it. I think that we have a lot of core beliefs that are very similar. So all of this kind of aligned in the same place, but it allowed me to kind of really do well in what I was doing and an area I knew I could do well, but really figure out what my take on sales was going to be. And now it's something that we believe in at Vayner Speakers, and it's grown the company that we have right now.
Dude, that's amazing. I'm thinking about a parallel universe, a multiverse, where you stayed in the sports industry, or, you know, and you served that community, got them on stages or worked close with them to build their brands. And then you would not have met or worked directly with Gary. Would you say the guy who recommended that, have you stayed in touch with him? Would you consider him some a mentor, coach, or friend that's like, dude, if it weren't for you, I would have not probably working with Gary to make our own company together. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think I'm still very close to him. He was at my wedding a couple of years back, by all means. And I think that, yeah, it's obviously a different, totally different world. You know, I studied sports in college, and, you know, of all my friends, there's very few of us who are still you know, working in sports. And I think there is a world where I could be working for a sports team. And, you know, I joke, my wife has the resume I always wanted, right? She worked at ESPN for the Patriots, for the Red Sox, you know, all the teams I grew up loving. Whereas I kind of realized pretty early on, like, that's not necessarily the path I want, even though it's a path I thought I wanted. But the fun part about what I do is, you know, we represent 20 speakers, but I work with hundreds every single year. And I've worked with some of the biggest names in the world, presidents, world leaders, entrepreneurs, athletes, you know, actors, you name it. And I think the coolest part is that every day is a new challenge. It's a new person I'm working with. So I wouldn't change anything. But I certainly think that there's a completely different way I could have gone about this. And you know, it would have been wrong that way either.
Yeah, dude, it has changed. And I've heard you talking about this in the past where speakers and that whole industry wasn't cool and sexy as it is today. Can you want to unpack a little bit about what it used to look like 20 years ago and educate people who don't know what is a speaker bureau?
Yeah. I mean, look, you go back, you know, speaker bureaus existed probably 100 years ago, right? There was like some epic, like Mark Twain tour that took place on like a train 100 years ago. So if you really want to go back to the origins, you can. I don't know if that's the most interesting. It's really, I mean, it was also, wow. I forget who the people were. It was like, you know, it was significant people, right? Like Mark Twain, like, you know, Einstein.
Hemingway.
It was like really, yeah, exactly. It was those kind of that caliber.
But, yeah.
You know, but I'm also sure the money was very different, but you fast forward, the real industry in my mind started probably 50 years ago. You had, you know, local news anchors, you had politicians after they'd retire. You'd have people like that. And it was really mostly in the political arena, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, doing these kind of things. And, you know, the money wasn't huge, but it was, you know, a nice way of making a living, supporting a book sale or something like that, in a completely different way than what we have today. You also have to remember travel was very different. You know, inflation wasn't what it is. So the numbers were just very different. And the industry evolved. More and more people started doing this and seeing that there was an opportunity. More events were taking place. And I also think fame changed, right? I look at it, you know, in the 90s, you know, how many athletes did you actually know of that you were aware of? Whereas now, you know, every athlete on every team, right? If you're interested in that, right? You know, the things that are interesting to you. There's, you know, three times as many TV shows that get produced in a year than there were 5 years ago. So there's just more talent that exists. So it's also become something where people see it for what it is. They see it as an opportunity to, you know, make some money, right? We joke it's the best paid part-time job. But like when I started at CAA, you know, it was crazy if there was going to be a speaker making $200,000 for a speech, right? Now it's not unheard of for people to make $500,000 for a speech, right? It was crazy to think of an A-list celebrity doing a presentation or Q&A at an event. Now that is a regular thing. And I think that there's a couple things that have come into play there. The biggest in my mind is social media, giving people the opportunity to expose themselves into a new territory so that people could see who they are. I also think that business has just become a cooler thing. So you have business celebrities, right? Like Mark Cuban isn't someone who 30 years ago was really making waves, right? The speakers in the business space were like, Famous Amos, Wally Amos, right? Mm-hmm. Like the cookie guy.
Yeah.
Like he was a big time speaker and it was his brand and that was a big thing. But he is not, compared to the individuals that are out there today, even close on a branding level. And so I think business became a cooler thing to do. And so young people started looking to be entrepreneurs because of what that meant. And then you also have celebrities who wanted to do more than just be a celebrity, and they wanted to get into business. So all of these different things kind of culminate in an evolution of the speaking industry. So a bureau is merely a, you know, cohort of speakers represented by an individual or an organization, where it's my job as a speaker's agent and a bureau's job to find paid opportunities for those speakers. So the evolution of the industry has grown tremendously over the last 10, 15 years. It's been fun to watch from the inside. But a little bit of what we're doing is trying to, you know, shake things up, because of all that innovation, the bureau business itself has not really evolved and stayed with it. And so we try to look at it where if we can put a little bit of innovation behind this stuff, we can make a big difference. And, you know, in the last 5 years since we started the company, we've seen that kind of working the way we expected it to. And now we're just trying to put jet fuel on top.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. Yeah, thanks for that history lesson. I didn't realize Mark Twain, Hemingway, and all these guys were touring. I mean, talk about like a cool rat pack of intelligence. You know, they were just like, I'm sure they had their own version of swag.
But how cool is that? Dude, what would you say? Because I get a lot of people who are trying to grow as an influencer, thought leader mm-hmm. through podcasting or whatever, building their personal brands. And sometimes I think there's definitely a gross mismanagement of expectations out there in social. I'll blame Gary for a lot of this too. It's like they come to me and they're like, dude, I want to speak on stage. So I'm like, you have zero presence online. Like, do you have nothing? Even though you have a lot, you have massive business success. You're a multimillionaire, whatever it is. How many of the people that you work with, or would you just say in general that you know of, percentage wise, actually use it as a platform to promote something? Like, okay, mm-hmm. it's just a short stint, 12 months, 18 months, I'm going to promote this book, versus the guy where this is the business. Because there's two versions, right?
Yeah.
I'm in, I'm going to hustle, and then I'm out. I got a business to run, versus the guy who's like, yeah, I need to put food on the table.
Yeah. I think I always look at it differently, where it comes down to justification, right? Of time, of energy, of money, of resources for both sides. So if a speaker's out there, they're doing it for a reason, right? That reason can certainly change over time. Are they doing it to grow their brand? Are they doing it to sell books? Are they doing it to, make money? All of that changes over time. And I think it's something where it doesn't have to be static. So a lot of people start out and they're like, hey, I want to be on stages, because they think like, hey, that's going to mean, I'm going to sell more books. My business is going to grow. I have an ego. I've seen other people do it and I think I can do it. I want to make more money. I want to work less, right? All of these different things, they all see it as like an opportunity. But I think that ultimately you get what you put into it. And people look at, I love using Gary as an example for this, but people look at it as like an overnight success. Like, I could not get rid of him as a speaker. I couldn't pay someone to have him on stage, 15 years ago. It takes time, right? And he was a great speaker, but didn't have the recognition. And I think that now all it takes is, putting speaker in your description in Instagram, and then all of a sudden you're a speaker. And like, that's not really what it takes. You have to, put work in, you have to have the energy, you have to have the drive, you have to practice, right? And so so many people just think they can hop on stage and tell their story, but that's not really that interesting, right? You talk about successful business people. How many successful businesses are there now? Like hundreds, millions, right? Like, so many people have had success in business. So is it really that interesting to hear someone get on stage and share their story? Not to be crass here, but like, someone once said to me, the reason that a group was not representing any Paralympians was they were like, they all have incredible stories. And it's not to take away from any of them. But the reality is that, how do you differentiate? So if you look at it within a lens of an industry, it's how do you differentiate yourself? And so if you want to get on stage and do this stuff, by all means, anyone can do it. That doesn't mean you're going to be good. Doesn't mean you're going to get paid. And it certainly doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight. You got to put the time in. You got to put the energy in. Having an online brand certainly helps. That doesn't dictate anything. I know tons of great speakers who have very, very low profiles. I know tons of terrible speakers who have, very significant social brands. So it's not necessarily a direct corollary. It certainly helps. But I think at the same token, it's, where you're putting your time, your energy, your resources, that's where you're going to see the best benefit and gain.
Any tips for people who are considering, making this a part of their business? One thing I'll throw out there for you as a tee up is, have some success, have some stories like already sort of polished and massaged before you even, like play the, I always liken it to comedians, playing the holes in the wall, right? You're not going to go play Madison Square Garden overnight, do the little holes in the wall for free. I heard you say Gary was pouring wine at some of the earliest events. Right? He was like the sommelier working the gig before he got on stage. It's like that. It's like, eat some humble pie. Maybe you're successful, but any other tips that you have for people that want to sort of break out into this?
No, I love the comedy analogy. It's so perfect for this space, right? People think that like, oh, I've got a good story. I've got personality. I can get on stage. Like, somebody should be paying me. And it's like, to what end? Like, are people going to show up to see you? Because if they're not, then why are you getting paid to be there? Right. And so do you have a value and authenticity, something that you can deliver that no one else can? then what are you doing there? So I think that like the idea of stand-up comedy, like you're working open mic nights, right? You're getting 2 minutes, you're getting booed, you're getting heckled. Like you got to go through that, the gut punches to really see how it goes and put the energy in. Cause I don't think enough people do that. Enough people, you know, see it as an opportunity to kind of grow. Like, you know, I'll use like Jesse Itzler. It's a great example. He's someone that I met Jesse probably 20 years ago at the US Open. And he was a successful entrepreneur, had no interest in sharing his story like this. And it wasn't until a friend asked him to that he got on stage and spoke. And then he was like, oh, this was fun. And then it was something that grew. But Jesse still to this day is one of the best speakers I know. Jesse still practices in front of a mirror.
Hmm.
Do you know how many people reach out to me and they're like, hey, I want to be a speaker, right? You should represent me. I'm like, great. Can you send me a video of you speaking? Like, oh, I've never actually done a speech. And I'm like, well, then why would I represent you? Right? It's like asking a real estate agent, hey, can you sell my house? I haven't built it yet.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just not how this works. And I think that, you know, it's really tough space to get into and it's more competitive than ever before. So you have to be more self-aware and real with who you are and what you can do. And I don't mean to be a naysayer and, you know, make it hard for people to get started. But I think that people have to realize like, you know, you got to put the effort in, you got to have the drive, you got to really try and you got to support with everything else. I love telling, you know, Peyton Manning is a great example for this. Peyton Manning was doing speeches his very first year in the NFL. And it was because his father had been giving speeches for a long time. He saw that as a value. And then once he retired, he was ready to go. Too many entrepreneurs look at this and say, hey, I want to speak now that I'm successful and I want to demand this big number, but I've never given a speech before, right? Mm-hmm. It's like being on a board. Right? You don't just get placed onto a board of a Fortune 500 company with no background or history of being on boards, right? Go be on a nonprofit board and local charity, right? So you understand what it means, how you can help, what you like, what you don't like, and then you'll get opportunities, right? You'll have an experience just like anything else. And I think that too many people wait until they think they're ready and they don't have the practice and then it doesn't make sense for them. Yeah. Whereas if you really put the energy in at the beginning, you're going to get somewhere 5-10 years from now, just like Gary, just like Peyton Manning, just like any of these other successful folks who have been doing it for a real long time.
You know, not to beat the analogy thing over the head, I have one more for you that I think you'd appreciate. Mm-hmm. We all know how to drive, right? I can get into my Hyundai, my Toyota, my Tesla, whatever. But we're not Formula One drivers, and people coming here right. Like, yo, dude, get me on the circuit. I want to start racing in these races. Like, what are you talking about? It's another level when those lights are on, you're on that stage, whether it's 50 or 500 or 5,000 people, it's a totally different game. Totally different right. game. And unless you've done that, just because you know how to speak doesn't mean you know how to drive a Formula One race car.
Well, I also think of it like that. You know, I've heard from countless people where they're like, you know, I was doing speeches for years, but as soon as I got paid, game was changing, right? Suddenly the pressure's on to deliver, right? Yeah. You're not getting paid to do something. You're like, oh, if I'm no good, I'm not getting anything out of this. Like, there's no pressure. But as soon as somebody's actually writing you a check, then you want to figure out how to deliver. So it really changes what your expectations are.
Yeah. And then you see the other people that are there with you on the stage, sharing the stage and their next level. And you're like, what am I doing here? But anyway, I know you guys are super selective. I've sent people your way. I try to be selective myself. I'm like, okay, I don't want to send Zach anyone that might waste his time. Can you talk about some of the criteria you look for when vetting some speakers?
Absolutely. And I always appreciate when you reach out because I think you have a great eye for talent. I think, you know, we're 5 years old. We're still a small company. We represent 20 folks. We've turned down probably at this point close to 2,500 speakers, and many of them have been successful time and time again. And it's just, you know, a matter of, do we have the resources to deploy towards it? And are we someone that we think we can believe in that person and build a business with them? We're looking for the long term. We're looking for people that we can really grow things with. Authenticity is first and foremost, right? It's got to be someone who is authentic to what they're speaking about, someone who believes in it, someone who has a background that allows them to be an expert in that space. Someone who has a brand, whatever that might be, doesn't mean they have to have huge social numbers, but they have to have success having done what they do. And then, look, honestly, the beauty of what we do is we get to work with people we like, genuinely want to be with, spend time with. I was on the phone with a client yesterday, smiling the entire time. That was not always the case. So, you know, we really try to find the best people possible who have an opportunity to grow their business in the speaking space. So sometimes I look at it where it's like underexposed talent that deserves to be overexposed. So by that, I mean folks who, whether it's been lack of management, mismanagement, no management in terms of their speaking business, but they are great speakers and they have had success. It's like, great. If you're successful despite yourself, how can we with strategy and success and expertise figure out how to take it to the next place and grow together? So we've done it with countless speakers. You know, we haven't succeeded with everyone. I won't claim to be the best in the world. But I think that what we do is we look at things a little bit differently than our competitors. We try to be more bespoke. And so in doing so, we have to have a little bit more of a narrow lens and specific focus around the folks that we work with, because we want to make sure that we can deliver in a way that is going to be valuable for them, but also valuable for our team.
I love that. I love the bespoke concept. And it shows with your talent roster, right? You're not working with hundreds and hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. So I love that, because then you could focus truly on the individual, their needs. As far as their whole ecosystem, you know, the Vaynerverse is an example. Like, how do you sort of analyze what they're doing and what they need to do? Do you set a roadmap for them that they then execute on? Or do you help them in any way on those tactics?
That's a great question. You know, we look at it bespoke-wise in both ways. So we kind of built our business around an idea of no two events being the same, but the same thing can be applied to speakers. No two speakers are the same. So we don't offer a roadmap where, like, this is what you have to do. It's really more about being in concert with your clients. And we try to understand who they are, what they're looking to do, and how to adapt along the way. So that when they're at different points in their career, we can be right there with them to provide them the resources and knowledge that they need. So of our 20 clients, every single one of them is unique. And I think that we try to pull the transaction out of the transaction and make it more of a relationship on both sides of the deal, and try to understand what our clients need to be successful. Give them that kind of love and care and service. And then alongside that, make sure that our customers are feeling the same thing so that they know what's going on, that we're transparent with everything, and that we are, you know, removing that transaction to allow them to have one less thing to worry about. So it's an easy idea, but, you know, the way you describe having a small roster, I always call it the Jerry Maguire problem, right? And if you remember that movie, he was all about, like, we had less clients, more attention. It's like, that's great, but how do you scale that? So oftentimes we joke around here that we're trying to scale the unscalable, right? Most of our competitors are trying to figure out how to do the opposite. How do you convert things to more operationally sound, robotic transactions? We're trying to make it less so, but in doing that, create a better relationship, understand our clients and what their needs are so that we can actually be successful for them.
It's funny, dude. Thanks for sharing that. It's... From the outside perspective, it seems contradictory to Gary's brand, where he's like, you know, hustle and grind and grow and just, you know, work till you get what you're dreaming of. Where versus this, and I don't know internally how many clients Vayner X has. You know, we work with Sasha, so I have an idea of the clients there, but. Is that how it's in most of the companies within Vayner? You know, we're bespoke. We're staying really close to our clients versus, you know, quality over quantity. Or is that a Vayner speaker specific thing?
No, that's a good question. So I would say it is a little bit different. I think our business, you know, is really the only talent facing business compared to all of our sister companies that are all more focused on the brand side. So we represent talent, right? And our customers are brands. Whereas on the other side, it is their customers are the, their clients are the brands. So that's a major differentiator. I do think that it is more, it's productized, but it is bespoke, right? You can't sell the same advertising strategy to every brand. That just doesn't make sense. So it's really kind of figuring out how do you fit the Vayner way into an existing strategy or brand. For us, it is more about understanding who our clients are and then figuring out how to deliver for them, because I can't put the same game plan together for Gary that I would for, for Ryan Holiday, right? For Swan Sid, it doesn't work because they're different people. Right? They speak to different audiences, they speak to different groups, they speak on different topics. So it is more individualized. But where we see the value is that there's a lot of commonality. So I like to look at our client roster as like a big Venn diagram where there's a lot of overlap between different people. That doesn't mean anyone is duplicative of anyone else, but there is overlap between what they talk about and how. And so we see, you know, the things that really excite me are when we see a email come in to three different clients' websites for the same event. Then it's like, great, we're on to something if they are interested in three of our people.
Yeah.
Right. If we are having a conversation and they book two, three, four speakers of ours, like obviously there's a connective tissue that aligns everything. So we really look at that as as exciting moments. It's not like VaynerMedia is going to be doing something for, you know, three different brands in the same commercial. That's just like not how that industry works. So it's a little bit more unique, but I think it's kind of the nature of the business itself.
Yeah, I love that, dude. There's a unique challenge that I'm beginning to recognize here that you personally may have and your other speaker agents, in that there's the obvious, the speakers, right? They're your first and foremost priority in serving them in a bespoke fashion. But then you have the events too. You have to have really tight relationships and trust built over time, right? You're like, okay, speak at this event, speak at that event. You obviously create your own events too. So can you talk about that dynamic and like making sure, like, do you send Tom over there and do you ever get, I mean, he's great, but he's just an example, but like, do you get feedback from the event? Go, hey, did we serve you correct? Like, how does that dynamic work and how do you please them? Because they're kind of a client as well, right? You don't want to break the trust.
Yeah, no, that's 100% accurate. I think that we are very focused on making sure that we're putting our clients in the best position to succeed. So if Tom's going to speak at an event, he needs to know who's in the audience, what the expectations are, why they're bringing him in. And we spend a lot of time and energy and constantly innovate around that and how we deliver that information to our clients in the most concise and useful format. It's also something that's bespoke to them. We have different clients who want it different ways. They want different questions answered. They want just to know more or less, or some demand pre-calls. Some don't want to have a call. So it's always unique to the individual, but there is a feedback loop that exists with every event. And it is something where it's our responsibility to deliver our speakers in a way that's going to be successful. So I had one customer who once said to me that we offer free consulting. And I was like, we do? Like, well, yeah, you're giving me all this great advice. You're telling me, you know, why we shouldn't do this or how this might be more thoughtful if we did it this way. And I was like, yeah, I was like, but that's not free consulting. I was like, you're booking one of my clients for $50,000. The least I could do is make sure that they're happy at your event and you have a successful event. So if I see something, I'm not going to just ignore it so that my client's going to get there and there's going to be a problem. I was like, it's the very least somebody should be doing, but I don't think that enough people think about it in our space and most spaces. I don't think people are really thoughtful about making sure that it's going to be a success, right? Like, you know, how many people are, you know, how many car salesmen sell a car to someone that they really don't need, want, or with features that aren't going to make sense for them, right? If it's right for the bottom line, it's right for the bottom line. We look at it as like, how is this going to be a win for all sides? If I'm getting a call back from someone like, hey, this was such a great experience, how can we book someone with you on your roster next year? That's huge for me. And to what you were saying at the very beginning of this call, like, you know, the relationships are so valuable. I have a great relationship with this event agency. It started, there were two partners. I was very close with one. We had a situation. There was a comedian that got her back throughout and they had 24 hours to find someone else to do this event. I was able to help them. It was scrambling. We were in the trenches together. We made it happen. We developed a great relationship from that. That guy's partner is someone who I've now developed a great relationship with. He's coming to New York next week and we're going ice skating with our daughters. Right? That is not something that I do with many clients. That is not something I do with many customers, but you develop those relationships over time by caring. And so you never know where these things are going to start. But I think that, yeah, you really have to actually think and be thoughtful about what success looks like for everyone, and then actually deliver that and not just pay a lip service.
I love that, dude. Yeah. I'm all about relationships. And I think I've learned that from you guys. As well, but it's so powerful, man. If you look at it that way, I've heard you also say, you know, we try to remove the transaction, from every conversation. You know, this is, and Gary is specifically giving me that that feedback directly. Like, dude, you went transaction too soon, and that's always stuck with me. Because, you know, as an early entrepreneur and anyone who starts a business, you often think it's just hard to to shut that light off, right? You're like,
you're always looking at the P&L.
Exactly. You're like, oh, this guy seems like a really cool person that I could. And sometimes you get excited about potentially working with them too. It's not just about the money, the business, but the relationship for sure should be the forefront, because that's how we build trust, right? That's how that's how we grow together. And I love the family dynamic, dude. Congratulations, by the way, on you and your growing family, man. Let's talk about a little bit about
Thank
that and the Nadler family and how that has played into your role as the hustle grind and growing. You know, it's hard to work with Gary, I know, but how does that dynamic and balance for you work out now that you're a family guy, dad?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, it's just perspective. You know, you talk about like the hustle grind culture. I think, you know, ambition is something you either, you know, are born with or you have to figure out along the way. I've always been someone who's just going to work hard regardless. And, you know, maybe I'm going out less because I want to spend more time with my daughter. But like, you know, the one of the only great things about the pandemic was the amount of bedtimes I missed was almost next to none because I was always home with my daughter. So like, that was awesome. And now maybe it's just the hours are different, right? Maybe I'm in the office earlier, maybe I leave earlier, but then I'm back at my desk after she goes to bed, right? I still get the stuff done I need to. And I mean, look, honestly, like I have a teddy bear right here, you know, for those, I know this is a podcast, but those watching on video, like that's from my daughter, right? So like, I'm always thinking of her and, you know, we do the things we do for our family. But I think that it just gives you great perspective on what's important. And also allows you to kind of prioritize things a little bit differently. So maybe you'd be thinking more about, you know, fun stuff than the work stuff. But if you have a, you know, I've got a my daughter's ballet recital later today. You know, if I'm going to that, I got to prioritize so that I can get everything done I need to so that I can be there. Versus if I didn't have that, well, then I can, you know, delay things. I can go wander around the office. I can go, you know, maybe take a lunch or something with someone. But no, it's just more about prioritization, time management, and then making sure that you're there for the people that you want to be there for.
I love that, dude. There were some hiccups in my family in terms of time management. It took forever, dude, for us to realize we got to have a shared calendar. You know, you're telling me I got to go pick up the girls or I got to drop them off here and there. And like, I need to see it on my calendar. Like, let me know, you know, or it's not happening.
Well, like I also, we adapted something. One of my clients mentioned this to me and I was like, you know what? That makes a ton of sense. We now, when we share information with our clients, like, hey, here's an offer to go speak in San Diego, right? I'm making this up. And, you know, no one would be like, well, you know, you're going to be away for this many nights. Now it's like, okay, you're going to be away for this many bedtimes. Because what's the night if you're not going to, you know, if you get to put your kids to bed and then you can take off and go somewhere. That makes it a lot different than if you're like, hey, you're going to be gone for a night. It's like, oh, well, do I get to see my kids to bed or not? Because I think that makes a big difference. So we started thinking about things differently. And honestly, like I probably wouldn't have the same perspective if I didn't have a family. So, you know, it's given me a chance to do that. Not every one of my clients has a family and like, hey, it's each their own. So it's something where you just got to kind of adapt to it. But I think that the family dynamic and something is, you know, it's powerful. And I think it gives you more perspective for yourself and for others.
Yeah, for sure. I love that, dude. Thanks for sharing that. Are you going to be home for bedtimes? You're right. Because like, just because you schedule that flight and you'll, hey, I'm going to be home tonight. Yeah, it's past bedtime. You're absolutely right.
Exactly.
That's so good. It's so good, brother. Let's get into sort of the penultimate portion of the show called Embrace the F Word, meaning failure. So anything that you could share with us where you learned a lesson the hard way for our benefit.
Well, I always like to steal from my clients because they're always so great and they're much better at what they do than what I am and what I do. So I've been really thinking about this a lot lately. And Will Goddara, who's a client of ours, wrote this incredible bestseller called Unreasonable Hospitality. He has a great line that he took from his father that says, don't waste mistakes. And I'm just obsessed with that right now. So the idea of failure is something where like, sure, failure can happen and you worry about dusting yourself off, getting back on the horse and doing it again, right? Try, et cetera. But I think that the idea of not wasting it is really big. Why did you fail? What can you learn from that? Was it something that was self-inflicted? Is it something that came because of external circumstances? Right? Is it something where there is a lesson to be learned? And I think that all of that is really valuable. And so the idea of wasting a mistake, wasting failure is something that is very clear. It's, you know, you're just going to move on. You got to sometimes move on in your head. You got to know what's going on, why it happened. Be able to learn from it, to actually see the value in it. Otherwise, it is just failure. And that exactly. is the real failure.
And doomed to repeat it at some point if you don't, mm-hmm. don't reflect on it. Yeah, thank you for that. That's so true, dude. I'm going to do something unique here because I actually have some friends, the community, asking some questions here. If you don't mind, I'll throw it over to them. I mean, they're not here, but I'll ask for them. They messaged me and I saw it this morning. I was like, oh, crap. This is a good one here. So any thoughts on or plans to build your own brand along Vayner Speakers? If so, why or why not? And do you feel like you have a need for that?
So like a personal brand, I would say not particularly. You know, my wife and I were actually talking about this yesterday. Like, I'm very content being behind the scenes. I do conversations like this because it's helpful for business and I don't mind. I like chatting, especially with someone like yourself who we've always gotten along over the years. But ultimately, like, I'm not really focused on my own brand. I'm much more interested in creating a better brand for the company, creating a better brand for my clients. And so I like to take a backseat to all that. So I'm often, you know, do as I say, not as I do. I certainly could be posting more on all platforms. But I think that, you know, harkening back to Gary's first book, Crush It, you got to find the mediums that make sense for you, right? If it's not natural for you to be taking a photo of yourself every single day, don't do it, right? I started writing a blog every other week because it was, you know, something my team wanted me to do. People seem to be getting enjoyment out of it. So I benefit and I'm putting an effort towards that. You got to be intentional with it and make sure that it's going to be valuable and something that you can maintain. And so it's something where I've gotten started with that and I'll grow it over time. But with, you know, a young business, you got to focus on what you got to focus on. So whereas a personal brand is always something that's valuable, my brand in and of itself is that of my clients. And I let them stand in front of me. And I've spent my entire career hiding from the back of photos or taking the photos myself. So I think I will maintain that and kind of keep my clients facing forward.
Yeah, I love that. I connect deeply with you and that mission because, you know, it brings me so much joy to just see my clients shine and, you know, gain success through any connections that we make. So I'm sure like there's some satisfaction and you know, gratitude, you know, that you have for doing that same thing. It's really service, right?
Serving the clients.
But yeah, I love that. I love that. The vision for Vayner, brother, what's cooking for 24? What's cooking for 2025? You know, what are some of the big things are you maintaining, growing?
Yeah.
What are we looking forward to?
You know, look, we have been incredibly lucky. We've grown really, really solidly. I think that we are at an inflection point where we're really ready to take off. It's been 5 years and let's not forget that there were 18 months, 2 years or no in-person events because of the pandemic. So we've had to adjust along the way. We are, you know, I've always been focused on having a larger marketing department than a sales team. And that's something we've managed to do and are going to grow that next year. We have really big plans. And I think that what's really exciting too is that all of the other Vayner entities are maturing alongside us. And so we are all kind of growing together and figuring out new ways to collaborate with one another, new ways to, you know, do more for ourselves, for our clients, for our customers. And so the connectivity we're seeing has been just tremendous. So we have really high aspirations and goals. I think we're at an inflection point. And I think that we are ready to kind of take on the next step. And, you know, we are when we started the company, I said to Gary, the world doesn't need another speakers bureau. So unless we're going to do this differently, let's not do it. And so we set out with certain things in mind, being more bespoke, doing things differently, being able to be nimble and innovate. And we've done just that. And now it's something where while we've been very successful, we're ready to kind of grow tremendously. And so while we're not going to have 30, 40, 50 clients tomorrow, we are in a place where the business is taking off and we're adding more team members. We are, you know, growing and very happy to do so. And I think that I'm very excited for what, you know, next week, next month, next year is going to look like. 2025 seems like it's decades away. So we'll worry about that in a few months. But I think that the reality is we have, you know, put ourselves in a position to succeed. And we're really looking to just take that on. And every day is a new challenge. We're always focused on the future. And as long as we're delivering for our clients, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
I love it, dude. So good. I'm having this fantasy moment where I'm like, hey, Zach, I need Gary. I need Tom. I need Jesse. Like, does that ever happen where it's like a double bill or triple package? Yeah. And you're like, oh, hey, you get a discount for sure.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, we had a lot of events that we've had multiple clients at. It's I actually prefer when we have multiple clients over multiple stages, like a year after year. So the same customer comes back time and time again, because that means that, you know, we've developed that relationship. But we've had a lot of events that have had multiple clients. This week, we had Will Gadara and Laura Gassner-Ottinger both speaking at an event, and they spoke at the same event last week too. So like we see that happening, and that's like, that's the stuff that warms my heart. You know, it was a lot of fun too. Like I got this poster behind me for VCon, and we've had multiple clients at VCon every single year. So that's always a lot of fun running around and seeing them all. But yeah, it's something where we love doing that. And I think that, you know, it's also an evolution of the events, right? We've done a lot of things where it's like, you know, maybe Gary's the headliner, and maybe Jesse's opening for Gary, right? And maybe someone else, yeah, you plug people in along the way. That's really cool. We had an event a couple of years back. This was 2019. I think we had six clients at the event. Like that was awesome, especially because we were a much smaller company then. I don't even think we had 15 clients. So when you have that kind of percentage, it was really, really cool. And so we continuously see that. And, you know, the best part is when groups come to us and like, hey, I don't even know who I want, but we had such a great experience. Let us, you know, what do you recommend? And I think that that means that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and we're serving both our clients and our customers.
Love that, dude. Yeah. Yeah. I'm admiring from afar what you guys are doing. I've seen you grow. I think I may have met you in year two or something like that. And, yeah, it's really setting the tone for what we do here at On Air Brands as well. You know, it's like less pressure of, hey, let's just get 100 clients tomorrow versus, you know, let's just really love on who we have and see how we can be more valuable, more of an asset versus liability.
If you do your work and you do what you're setting out to do, and you believe in the business itself, everything else follows. So like I am certainly as a, you know, the leader of the company, I'm, you know, paying way too much attention to the P&L and projections and, you know, forecasts, et cetera. But the same token, like day to day is much more like, what are we doing today to kind of advance ourselves and advance the company? And are we doing things the right way, the way we want to be doing them? I often catch myself and say like, hey, this isn't what you said you were going to do. Or, you know, this is the reason why I left a big agency to start a small agency, right? Like these are the things that you have to prioritize. And sometimes you just have to check yourself along the way to make sure that you're staying on course.
Do you, my last question, and then I'll share the last, very last question. But when you're working with clients, and you said it's bespoke, how many of them ask you to sort of be more of a PR agency, or like, hey, book me on podcasts, you know, book me on this, you know, get me at a book signing, versus like, hey, that's not our lane. You know, we're staying here. We're just getting you on physical stages or virtual stages.
Yeah, I always joke, you know, you don't ask your dentist to change your oil. Doesn't mean they can't, right? Like there's plenty of dentists who probably are in their garage changing oil as we speak. The reality is like, you know, that's probably not the most efficient use of their time. Like I am not a publicist. I certainly have a lot of relationships and have done my handful of, favors for people to plug people into other networks, et cetera. But like, it's really not our priority. I think that we've had those asks and we've had those conversations, but anything we're doing that's outside our lane is taking the priorities away from the efficiencies that we've created. So rather than getting into a new line of business, but that exists for a reason, we really focus on the stuff that we're good at and that we prioritize. So we have gotten those asks, but ultimately it's like, hey, and I was saying this to a friend the other day, I was like, the beautiful thing is like, when I was at CAA, I was kind of like doing all sorts of different stuff, even though I was in the speakers group, right? I was doing live tours, I was doing Comic Cons, I was doing some small endorsement deals. Here it's like, hey, we are a speakers bureau. Right? That is why we are representing the talent we represent. Some have agents in other spaces, some don't. And so we get asked to do certain things outside of what we normally are doing. But ultimately, it's like, hey, you're hiring us to do something, let us do our job. And that's kind of the goal.
Is that a somewhat recent thing? Like, were you more open to all those opportunities early on when you were growing, and then you reached a certain sort of threshold or milestone? They were like, okay, we got to.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we were saying before, like when you first start out, you're staring at the P&L constantly, and I think ultimately, we probably were doing some things, and you know, just like that eureka moment I mentioned before, I probably was doing some deals that were taking way too much time, not making the money because I was just like trying to grab every penny I could. And ultimately you look at it, you say, like, well, what is our priority? What are we supposed to be doing? What do we say we were going to do? And if you check yourself like that, it does evolve over time. It's like a muscle, right? Once you start doing it more and more, you kind of realize like, hey, I know what my priority is. I don't even need to be checking myself because I'm just going to get out of this at the very beginning. And so especially as the other Vayner companies have grown. We figured out how can we relay some of this business across other companies? How can we help one another? And it also works both directions, right? If other people are trying to play in our space, you know, if we're getting an opportunity late in the game, probably not going to be as effective with it. So I'd rather kind of hand it off to someone else who's be better at it and who that's their job. And thankfully, within the Vayner ecosystem, we've got some amazing people that we work with. So we get to do that, you know, quite often.
How excited were you when VCon was like being thrown into the conversations? I'm like, wait, we're going to have our own event?
How excited was I when VCon was over? Is that what you were asking?
Well, I'm sure it was exciting at the beginning and the end, right? Just the conception of it to like when it was over. It's like a wedding, right?
Exactly. It was a massive undertaking. The first year we had 155 speakers over 3 days. The second year we had 205 speakers over 2 days. So it's a huge, huge undertaking. It's really fun to see those things come together because, you know, something like VCon just didn't exist prior. Something like VCon was really just an idea, a kernel of an idea that really grew over time. And as we're really getting into high gear for planning next year in August, we are very excited. And I think that, you know, as I said, like year one, we didn't know exactly what we had, right? It was just an idea. Year two, we realized what it can be. And now it's like, great, it's on us to actually make this what it should be. And so we're really getting into high gear for it. It's exciting. And I think that, you know, early in my career, I worked in events. I did some celebrity golf tournaments and I realized pretty early on, like that was not going to be sustainable for me waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And the stress of event day was not for me. So being able to help with a small piece of VCon is very exciting. You know, I will say my wife is actually now one of the co-producers of VCon. So it's really fun to work with her, you know, in that kind of capacity. But I really have just a small piece of it kind of helping with the speakers, but it's a lot of fun because it's bringing a vision to life and it's working with fun people and it's doing something I've been doing and kind of employing a lot of the ideas that I've seen from the other side of the table, booking speakers for events. Now I get to kind of throw that into the mix on a stage. And so it's a lot of fun. And then the event itself is just an absolute blast to see it kind of take place. The worst part is I rarely get to see any of the speakers myself.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you for this saying that because I was just going to ask you this question. But I guess you don't get to really see when you're at the event because you're running around. But is there ever an opportunity for you to be at an event? I don't know how often you get to go to them and you're sitting in the audience and you're kind of like a scout, you know, you're like scout. Or is there anyone that you admire from afar? You're like, man, I'd love to rep them.
Oh, yeah. There's countless people. I mean, I think there's really great speakers out there. And I think the fun part now is the accessibility to seeing speakers is unlike any other time before. Right, the way that you can just pull up a video online is like nothing else. You know, and I think that there's nothing like seeing someone in person and seeing them live. And, you know, sometimes it's just letting yourself be captivated. And as soon as you see someone and you're like, wow, I'm just like, I can't take my eyes off them, or I want to investigate this further, or I believe in everything they're saying, that stuff matters. And I think that that'll never go away. And that's why live events didn't die after the pandemic, right? People like having that communal experience sitting next to someone else and watching someone speak, watching someone share information. And so, yeah, I'm always doing that. I'm always on the, you know, the look for more. But at the same token, like, you know, behind the computer is sadly where I do my best work. So I'm not on the road quite as bit as I used to be. But yeah, we're always looking out. And I think that, you know, you always want to kind of see what the competition looks like or how other people are innovating in the space.
Yeah. Dude, so give me a couple names that you do admire. And you're like, man, I really love their brand and what they stand for. It'd be really cool to work with them.
You know, we just signed, we haven't even done a formal announcement. We just signed two new speakers that I'm just like crazy in love with. So Kerry Walsh Jennings, who's an Olympic legend, has been just, you know, she didn't lose a match in three different Olympics. Like, it's crazy to think about kind of her level of competition. And so I'm really passionate about her and I've always been a fan from afar. And so it's really exciting to work with her. And then there's another a woman we started working with named Simone Yetch, who is a Swedish inventor. And she's known as the queen of shitty robots. And like, I love this because it's such like a left field thing of, you know, like, why are you representing someone who builds terrible robots? And it's like, well, it's the idea of creativity. It's the idea of getting inventive, being different and being thoughtful and having fun with it all. And so, you know, these are two very different people who are not like anything else on our roster. And it's really cool because when you see someone from afar and you're a big fan, when you start working with them, you're able to really kind of, you know, build something different and kind of grow it and, you know, mold it like a ball of clay. But at the same time, it's someone else's clay. So like I am just merely kind of like steering the ship a little bit and kind of directing traffic, but it's not to mix all my analogies here. But I think that it's ultimately like, you know, I like to be involved, but it's their business. And so I, you know, once you see someone from afar and you're really passionate about them, it's really cool to be able to be involved from the very, from the ground floor.
Yeah. So cool, man. Well, I appreciate all you do. I appreciate you being on this show and all our conversations over the years, brother. In one word, how do you help people?
I share. If I had to boil it down to one word, I like to make sure people know what I'm about. I like to share my talent. And by talent, I mean clients. I'm not being, you know, egotistical here. I like to share my clients with the world. I like them to share their information. And so I think ultimately that's what this world's all about. Got to put yourself out there and do what you can to help others. I know that's what you do at On Air. So it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah. Same. Pleasure's all mine, brother. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing some time with me. What's the best way that people can reach out to you if they want to potentially know more?
Check us out, VaynerSpeakers.com. VaynerSpeakers on every platform. Hit me up if there's ever anything I can do for you.
Awesome. Thanks, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Eric.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.